Coming up tonight, Carborough Board of Aldermen meeting at 7:30 in Town Hall. A couple of items on the agenda. The town's parking plan is one. There's going to be a work session to discuss regulations regarding protests, parades, and public assemblies. They'll also be talking about a request to support DACA beneficiaries in town, deferred access for childhood arrivals. That is one of the big issues that has been front and center on the national radar for the last couple of weeks, especially for the last week, I guess I should say, ever since President Trump's decision to rescind DACA effective in 6 months. That came down a week ago. Joining us now in the studio is Orange County Conservative Ashley Campbell to talk about that and more. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. How are you?
Doing all right. So, okay, DACA, we were planning to talk about this today. This is something that obviously has everyone talking about on the national level, but it's also taking shape locally and statewide as well, as you know, public officials around the country are reacting to it on every single level of government. So what do we make of this?
Yeah, that's very true. I mean, there's the Carborough Alderman meeting. As you said, it's going on tonight. You know, what exactly they'll be able to do, what wiggle room they have. I'm not sure. I know other municipalities have taken steps to make sure that, you know, immigration enforcement can't make sweeps through schools,
right,
you know, protecting students, and regardless of their immigration status. And actually, the Orange County School Board passed a resolution last night pretty much to that effect.
Mm-hmm.
And also, other municipalities have done things like making sure, you know, food and housing and healthcare is provided for regardless of your immigration status. So I don't know if they're going to do something like that or what exactly they're planning. But that's one of the local things that, you know, how it's affecting us locally. And the schools thing, as I mentioned, too. And then, you know, probably Chapel Hill and maybe the Orange County commissioners will do something similar to that. And so, you know, as a conservative living in Orange County, it's a little bit frustrating because I would imagine, you know, myself included, most other conservatives are we're hopeful that President Trump would take a stronger stance on immigration, including, you know, possibly rescinding executive order like DACA. Maybe not even because we are against something like this, you know, making some sort of pathway to citizenship, as it's often called, but just the way it was done through executive order. We wanted to see things done like this through a legislative process. So a lot of conservatives were more upset about how it was created than the actual content of it. So it seems like with President Trump, however, I mean, he initially came out and said that it made it sound like it was just going to be rescinded flat out, period. But now there's like a 6 month grace period and punting it. Well, some people might say it's punting it to Congress. I actually, I don't know if I want to say regardless of the outcome to see what Congress does with it. But I'm happy that Congress will have a chance to work on legislation, and hopefully they won't bungle it like they did healthcare.
So, et cetera.
Yeah, exactly.
So what do you want to see happen at the end of this? I mean, there's a couple of facets of the debate. There's the question of should this have been done via executive order or not. So there's sort of the procedural question, and then there's what should be done, period, right? So you've had the Dream Act or something like it that's been sort of introduced and reintroduced in Congress for the last 15 plus years. I was reading up on this earlier today. Orrin Hatch and Maria Cantwell, so Republican and Democrat in the Senate, back in 2001 introduced the Dream Act. So it's been talked about for 16 years. And nothing's been done. So what do you want to see result here?
Well, I think, you know, just from pragmatically, I don't know if there's going to be a good bipartisan effort to get legislation passed, and that's sort of going to be hindered on both sides of the aisle, I think, because you have Republicans that are sort of split. Some just want it rescinded completely, and mm-hmm. some that are, you know, like Paul Ryan, for example, aren't exactly immigration hawks, so they'll be more lenient with the legislation and be able to make more compromises. But then I'm a little bit skeptical. I think that the Democrats will want to be able to run on this issue, in 2018. I mean, I would like to see, you know, I would like to see the executive order gone. And if there's going to be immigration reform, then it needs to be done through Congress. And, you know, so I kind of feel like, you know, that's maybe the best possible outcome. I think that the DACA itself was just, you know, I read enough an argument that it seems unconstitutional to me. So if it's illegal, it just needs to be rescinded and started from scratch. I mean, if it's unconstitutional, it needs to just go, whether Congress does something or not. But then you have the real people involved. So mm-hmm. I guess that's why I'm willing to say that Congress needs to come up with something in its place.
Yeah, I was speaking with Ashley Campbell about DACA. We were talking about this at the end of last week, and I mean, you mentioned the real people involved, and I mean, there's hundreds of thousands across the country, and about 50,000 in North Carolina. I think the concern, the primary concern here is that all of those people who were or still are DACA recipients are kind of hanging in legal limbo right now, right? I mean, there's this
right.
6-month waiting period during which time you don't know what your legal status is. You don't know if you have to be looking over your shoulder or not,
yeah.
what your position is in this country that you've lived in for the last 10, in some cases, 20 or even 30 years of your life, depending on how long it's been. And I think one of the things that gets lost in this whole debate is the extent to which not knowing what your status is so important for people who have never had that experience, like not to know if you get pulled over by a police officer, like not to know or have a good idea of what that encounter is going to be like, or if you walk into a restaurant or a store, are you going to get served? Are you going to get kicked out? Like that uncertainty is so significant, and it gets taken for granted by people who can be certain about it. But the fact that, you know, have 800,000 people kind of hanging in legal limbo waiting for, of all things, Congress to do something, which no one should
right.
ever be waiting for Congress to do something, given the recent experience of Congress. But
well,
that's much more significant than I think people give it credit for.
Yeah. I mean, Congress is supposed to be deliberative.
I mean,
that's
yeah, yeah.
how this all came about, really, is because, you know, from my perspective, it seemed like, and President Obama in 2012 saw a good opportunity during an election year to say something to the effect of, well, Congress isn't going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just going to do this, you know, and say it's, you know, it's okay because of prosecutorial discretion.
Right.
But, you know, he's really, because something is given through DACA, like work permits, and then people are able to get things like social security numbers and driver's mm-hmm. license, et cetera. It's more like a legislative act done by executive power. So, you know, he suddenly created certainty for a certain group of people, but it was done through such tenuous means. And, you know, even his Department of Justice and people who are still in Congress now, like Dianne Feinstein, has made recent remarks about how mm-hmm. tenuous it really was.
Mm-hmm.
So they knew at the time that this could happen.
Yeah.
But they probably wanted to win the election.
Right, right. And
so,
I think, and a couple things, like, first of all, like, again, I think we've talked about this in recent weeks, because this has been a pet peeve of mine for the last few months, that people don't care about procedure, right? They just want their policies to get implemented. So people will make procedural arguments. They don't really care about them, because when it's them in power, then they'll do exactly the same thing. But we should care about procedure. I mean, that's what the Constitution is. The Constitution is procedure. The American institutions are founded on a particular procedure, which we really should care about, even if we don't. So that's thing number one. And then thing number two, and I think you just made the point a couple minutes ago, that Republicans are going to push back against a bipartisan solution because there's that wing that doesn't want, that wants to take a hardline stance. There's going to be Democrats who push back against the solution because they want it to be an election issue in 2018. I think that's right. And I think one of the issues with Congress, and we see it with this debate, like, this act was introduced in 2001 and it hasn't passed because people have wanted to run in 2002, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, 16, 18.
Yeah.
And it's so much easier to run for office saying, man, the other guy has gotten in the way of us getting something done. Like, you can't ever run on accomplishments. You have to run on future accomplishments. And we're seeing this with immigration. We're seeing it with healthcare. We're seeing it with so many big issues where Congress just keeps kicking the can to the next Congress. Because if you pass tax reform, because if you pass something, then you've got to run against the people who complain about the thing you just passed. Whereas if you don't pass something, then, man, just elect me one more time and I guarantee you I'll get it done.
That's all I need.
All I need is just one more
trip to DC.
Yeah. And I don't know how to get over that. Like, Congress has in the past, like, they've passed big things.
Sure.
It's just been a while.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's like you have to have some, all the stars align or something like that. And I mean, even with, you know, President Trump now, I mean, people, when it became clear that it was going to become not just a rescinded executive order, but rather go something that was going to be, Congress is more or less going to be instructed to take up, everybody thought, well, we're going to get a wall, or more border security as a concession. But now President Trump is given up on that, it seems. This morning, a spokesperson said that he's not even going to pursue a wall or better border security in any legislation. He just wants, you know, something to replace DACA, even if he has to take that off of the bargaining table. So, you know, that's the executive willing to make some concession, but I am frustrated. Like you were saying, you know, why doesn't Congress want to take this power back for themselves? And instead, we may see it play out in lawsuits. I mean, there's been lots of states that have filed suit against DACA, and now there are states that are trying to sue to preserve it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that may be the deciding factor in the end, just because it's going to be an executive with more power, judiciary with more power, and they're making laws together, and so in Congress sort of gets lopped out of this whole legislative process. And so I think that's just part of the issue, is that they are willing to concede power in order to have issues to campaign on. But they need to just use actual facts and information. By they, I mean people who run for political office and argue, you know, more substantively based based on fear or anger, because that's gotten us to where we are now.
No, I think that's a really interesting point, and that just reminded me of something I read years ago on a completely different issue. I'm teaching American government, and right now we're talking about the balance of power and federalism and the separation of powers and checks and balances, and I'm teaching it in terms of this power struggle, right? Like, the federal government is trying to get more power from the states and vice versa in legislative. But it's actually, in a lot of cases, the other way around. Like, in a lot of cases, and you just mentioned it, in this case, the legislature doesn't want the power. They want someone else to take the buck so it doesn't have to stop with them. I read the same thing, and this was a fascinating argument with the gay marriage debate a few years ago, when, and the same thing, I think, with healthcare as well, where legislators would not take up the issue of same-sex marriage, and instead they pushed it off on the courts. They said, well, right. we're not going to do anything because the courts are going to resolve it, the courts are going to resolve it, the courts are going to resolve it. And it became increasingly apparent that the legislature, that everyone in the legislatures, like nationally and statewide, were just going, oh, thank God the courts are going to resolve this so that we don't have to take a hard stand one way or the other and yeah. potentially lose votes in the next election. Like, there's a lot of buck passing and, like, power...
Right.
Power shifting away from institutions, which is a fascinating thing.
It is. And, I mean, their argument, of course, when the election comes around is like, you know, only if you elect me can I fix this problem.
Yes.
But then it's like, well how are you going
to
fix a problem
with
less power?
We'll leave it up to the courts and I'll do it. Yeah.
Yeah. So, well, any case, yeah, I think we're in perfect alignment on that. But, you know, some of the other parts of this is that, you know, it seems like the defense of DACA, you know, in the lawsuit, it's a lot of the rhetoric surrounding it is compassion based, and there's an economic defense as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that there's part of it of people who are arguing to keep DACA will say that, you know, of course, it's not just these jobs that DACA recipients have are not jobs that are taken away from Americans, which is I can possibly agree with because it's not a zero-sum game.
Right.
But then again, on the flip side of that, if I were to try to tell people, probably, you know, the same audience would overlap to a great degree that, you know, wealth is also not a zero-sum game, and that, you know, just because somebody has a lot of money, that means another person will have less than they might disagree. But, you know, so I would have greater sympathy with the economic argument for preserving DACA if there's also a massive repeal of regulations that would make, you know, wealth creation, job creation a lot easier for people. Because right now, I mean, federally, there's $4 trillion every year spent just in complying with regulations. Mm-hmm. And if just a percentage of that could be used for people to, you know, expand their company or create more jobs or give their employees better benefits or something like that, then that would also stimulate the economy and there'd be an even better effect. But, yeah, you know, so I don't know if that can be a possible compromise if Congress is actually able to compromise. We'll see. But that would be a welcome thing for me if they were just able to get rid of some of the red tape that businesses have to deal with right now.
We got to wrap up. Ashley Campbell, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, Aaron.